Blog Talk Radio. Hello? 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 Carol? Hello? Hello. Hello. Hello? Shanti, call Sharice, tell her I'm trying to get into this call. Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Erica?
Yes, Carol?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Perfect.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was just determined to keep trying.
Okay.
So I'm so excited to have you on.
Yes.
Let me turn these down just a little bit.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, I kind of lost my train of thought here. But I wanted to get you to share your story, first of all.
Okay.
And maybe some insights on how you survived your dark places or your dark times.
Okay.
Right. So I'm just giving you the floor.
Okay, perfect. Good evening, everybody. I'm so excited to be here. My name is Erica Harris, and I'm the founder of Restored Terrain International Ministries and Ministry of Healing and Restoration. And I focus on health, healing, and just restoring the body, restoring the mind, restoring hope, restoring trauma, drama, guilt, and all that stuff. But just a little bit about me, there's been so many things that have happened to me personally in my life. But I'll just, because of everything that's going on in our nation right now, I'll share my I'll share just a lot of different things. But I was married for 13 years to a very abusive man, to say the least. And so in the midst of those 13 years, I lost who I was. And what I realized is that he didn't take anything that I didn't give him permission to take. And so I went into this marriage. I had just got saved and, you know, I had just started to come into a relationship with the Lord. And I had people around me that will say, if you pray, he would change. And so I had all these concepts of what I thought that my marriage should look like based on what others were telling me. And so I followed their blueprint only to marry him against sound wisdom, sound advice, against the advice of my mother and the advice of my spiritual mother and my dad. And I continued to go forward because I felt like, well, they really don't, you know, they really don't understand. They, you know, they really don't know. They don't want me to be happy. But even in the midst of that, there was something in my gut that was screaming no. But my heart and my emotions and my flesh were saying yes. And so I go into the situation. I was a flight attendant with American Airlines at the time. So I had all the free air miles. So we fly to Vegas. And even there in the hotel, the Holy Spirit was still saying no. And I was still overriding him saying yes. So we go to the little chapel there in Vegas, and even the minister that was there in one of those small chapels, he even knew that this was not God's will. But I continued to go forward because I heard people tell me, if you pray, he'll change. So, you know, we, you know, walked through all that. I moved out of my home, moved into his home, not realizing that during that time that I was going to be held captive. And what I mean by that was, everything that I thought that I was and everything I had built and accomplished up until that point got stripped away from me in that house. So I was told how to wear my hair, how to spend my money. At that point, it wasn't so much a love relationship. It was, you need to pay the rent today or you have to go. It was changing of locks. It was putting my Bible in the backyard. I'm with the dog. I was terrified of dogs at the time. Just everything that I was. I had to be home by a certain time. I couldn't shop for myself. I couldn't do anything for myself. And I had small children at the time. And in the midst of my small children, they went through a lot of emotional trauma. And so not really understanding, I wanted to get out, but I didn't have the strength nor the stability to get out because I was so deep into this because I felt like I just loved this man so much. And so in the midst of that, I was working during that time, but my days were always calculated from the time that I left the house to the time that I got back to the house. So he knew every stoplight. He knew he had calculated everything up into a point. And so sometimes when I was maybe 1 or 2 minutes off, he would sit there in the living room and put a chair, make me sit in a chair, and I had to explain to him at least 10, 20 times why was I a minute or two late than I was the day before. And so in the midst of all that, I'm doing all the things, again, that people said that I should do as a good wife. And I'm doing all those things. I'm trying to figure out, you know, I'm praying and, you know, this is not working, you know, because it got to the point to where I couldn't drive the car because he would sabotage the car. And so I was totally under this man's control. But every time I would find the strength to leave, I would go back. Something kept drawing me back. And finally, one day I was, my dad had to come pick me up because I was stranded. And I said, Dad, wouldn't it be funny if I had to come live with you? So we just kind of laughed. And so, you know, after all the years, that was the day that that I left. And I went to stay with my dad. He beat me, you know, really bad. You know, I've had situations where he's choked me unconscious. When I was pregnant with my youngest child, he would curse my womb. And so this is very, I'm talking driving down the freeway, hanging out the car type situations, putting the car in neutral, and literally in the street fighting. And so I experienced, and I'm just kind of running briefly, but there was just so many different experiences, high-speed chases, things that you would literally see on TV. But as I just continued to pray, and after I had moved with my dad for some time, he was still pursuing me and different things like that. And so I had began to pray for God to really make a way of escape for me. And the company that I was working for, all of a sudden, they had an opening here in Texas. And so things had become, had, you know, began to come into alignment. But there was no way that I can get my youngest daughter out of the state without wooing him, if you will. And so everything, you know, was falling in place for me to come here to Dallas. And this was right after 9/11. And I remember, doing everything possible to appease him, just to keep everything peaceful so that we can make this transition here to Dallas. Now, mind you, when we came here, I didn't know anybody. I was a flight attendant, and the headquarters for AA is here in Dallas. And this in my mind, I said, one day I'm going to move there, and I want to raise my kids there because I love the people there in Dallas. So when this opportunity came up for me to transfer, and it was, again, you know, just my God making a way of escape for me and my children, he finally agreed to allow me to bring my daughter if I promised him that he can catch up. I said yes. And I remember we got on the Greyhound, me and my kids, and I remember sitting there on that Greyhound bus, and I was like, I'm not, you know, you're not going to be able, you know, to catch up. But it was just a sense of relief. And it was almost like those 13 years, like I was living with the enemy, like God was, he protected me through those 13 years. But I lost everything that I was, even to the point to when I came out, I didn't know how to manage my money. I was afraid to spend my own money. I was afraid to do my hair any other type of way because I was what he wanted me to be. And so we transitioned here to Dallas, not knowing anybody, and I said to God, if this is you, I need for you to confirm every step of the way what is it that you've promised me. So I had me and my three girls on the bus. We had a little blue Ford escort station wagon that my company had got shipped to Dallas. And a word that God said that he will restore me and my girls' life here in Dallas. What that looked like, I didn't know. And so I needed God to be specific. I said, I don't want to go to a shelter. I don't want to have to live with anybody. You don't want to bypass that whole thing. But I need to know that this is you because we know no one here in Dallas. So we get here, and there was a lady. She said that I could get my car shipped to the Greyhound, right here at the Greyhound station in Arlington. And so we got there that night. We stayed over the lady's house the next day. And let me back up. And so in the midst of that, I had an apartment locator looking for an apartment for us because I said, when I get here, I want everything already set up. So the apartment was already ready when we got here. God had just started ordering our steps. And we had prayed and for a church, and I said, Lord, when I go to this church, I would know that's where we're supposed to be because the people would say, Erica, we receive you. We welcome you into our family. So we tried a couple of places, and we said, no, you know, that's not it. So just imagine this young woman, you know, at the time coming here to Dallas like 11 years ago, not knowing anybody with these three small children, totally confused about who I was and what I was even doing here. Left everything that was familiar. We went to a church in Carrollton, and they were getting ready to have a women's conference, and I went up for prayer. And the interesting thing is that we were the only African Americans in that church and really who had ever been in that church. And I'll never forget one of the ladies, she said, Erica, we welcome you into our family. And so I knew that I was safe. And in the process of being there, God began to just really store me, and that's where I first got a real revelation of the love of Jesus. And this a real revelation of just who God was, and I began to experience him in ways that I never even thought possible because I wasn't raised in the church. And, you know, there God began to heal and restore and just do some amazing things in me and my girls' lives. And, you know, so we, you know, there I was, you know, involved with, a couple Bible studies. I was just really just trying to, you know, find myself. And so we stayed there, you know, for quite a while, and we go back and we frequent. And, you know, in that, there was just so much healing and so much stuff that God began to restore my identity, my sense of worth. I was able to speak because in the midst of those 13 years, in addition to all the trauma that I had created before that, I felt like I had no voice. And so they allowed me to just flow and be who I was and flow prophetically and just different things like that. But even as God began to heal me, he came to Dallas. And so when he came to Dallas, and the funny thing is that he was already here kind of checking me out before I even realized that he was here. He would make these trips. So he was always, you know, if you will, two steps ahead of me. So when I thought he was in L.A., he was actually here in Dallas, and he had a place. And so by this time, the drama and the trauma, the abuse, it started all over again, you know, because at that point, he wanted to see the baby and, you know, this and that. So we walked through that. We had even moved back in. He moved into the home that I was in. But let me back up. Even after that, the church that I was at, the people began to turn on me because he would create these stories. And with, you know, they knew my character, they knew me, but he was a very cunning man. And so I was in Life Team Ministry. I was running a single mom's Life Team group there at my home. And so by this time, he had moved back in, and we had started, you know, to go to counseling and, you know, seeking restoration. Again, the pastors at that time said, no, you know, this is not God's will. So I continued to go on. And during this time, I probably filed for divorce, like, three or four times in the midst of this time. But the very last thing that happened was the truth had began to really just come out, you know, about a lot of things, you know, that had happened. He was married to another lady in California. It was this horrendous thing. And I had an experience one night where he had violated me. He had raped me. And a couple of days after that, I had felt, like, really ill. And so things began to spiral again, you know, after that. And so in the midst of all that, again, I had to, because we had filed for the divorce. Well, I had filed for the divorce. And I had the highest protective order that you can get. And he wound up, you know, going to jail. He totally dismissed. You know, all that. But when he got out, he came to the house, and there was a police officer, because me and my children, we were just so afraid. We were just terrified. And the police officer said, because since Texas is a community property state, you know, it's still his home too. But I remember that Sunday when we went to church, I was getting out the car, and I heard the Holy Spirit clear as day. He said, get your things and go to a hotel. So I told the kids, I said, get your things. We didn't even have any money then. And so I get my things out of obedience, and I called a couple of friends, and they had given us some money and, you know, different things like that. So we go to the hotel. That night, thank God that we weren't there. He had broke in the house, broke all the windows out the house. And so my alarm had went off, and my best friend lived around the corner, and she was one of the people on the alarm application. And so we rushed to the house, and he's sitting there on the steps. And I was trying to explain to the police and, the steps, because it was a two-story house. And I remember the police told us that me and my children had to leave. And I'll never forget that look on his face. And so we didn't go back, you know, to the house, because he had broken out, you know, all the windows. And by this time, I was already in the midst. After that, you know, we had started to pack and, you know, different things like that. So he went and stole, like, all my sheets, anything that I needed in order to live on. And so in the midst of us not being able to go back to the house, we became homeless. And so in the midst of us became, you know, when we became homeless, we, you know, during those times, that's when you really find out who's there for you. There would be times that me and my children, we would sit in our car, and I would just cry. I was trying to be strong, because the people who said that they would help us, they didn't. And so we was just going to Motel 6s, you know, running here, you know, running there, you know, having other people get hotel rooms in their name, and, you know, just different things like that, because he was just following us just fearlessly. And so finally he backed off for a while after that, because he couldn't find us. And after that, he passed away 6 years ago, and I'll never forget. I was on my way to the office, and I had just began to pray. It was just this urgency on me to pray. And I go to his apartment. I went to his apartment that morning just out of obedience. And in the midst of that, his door was open. And so I remember walking in, his door was just unlocked. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and he was leaned over on the sofa. And even in the midst of that, the state that he was in was almost like he had reverted to a little boy. And I remember saying, let me call your doctor, let me call 911. And he begged me not to. And it was beer cans and feces and stuff just all over, you know, his apartment. And so I was contemplating, okay, God, you know, what should I do? So I went in the bathroom and I ran him the bath water and got him up. He barely had any strength. He had lost so much weight. And I put him in the tub because I remember he used to like to take a bath. And so as he was sitting in the tub and I was at the door frame, I was standing there and I said, well, you just going to lay over here and just die, you know, because of your pride? And he just had this faraway look that he was looking at me. And so I was cleaning the toilet and everything. And I remember just ministering to him, you know, just saying like, you know, you need to, you know, give your life, you know, to the Lord and, you know, just do business with God. But what I didn't understand was that he was already in the midst of dying. And so I ministered to him, and then I left, and I said, okay, I'll come back after class tonight, because I was taking some ministerial classes at the Potter's house. But that night, as I was getting ready to get off the freeway, literally it felt like something just turned my car in the other way to go home. And there was this eeriness that night. The same thing happened to me the next morning. I said, you know what? I'm not seeing anybody. Again, living a life of sacrifice, a sacrificial life for others, irrespective to what had been done to me and what I allowed to be done to me. And so in the midst of all that, I get this unction to pray. I go to his place, and right when I walked in the door, I said his name. He said, I walked in the bathroom. He had just passed away. And so if you can only imagine the horror and the terror that I felt, you know, in that moment. But I was so blessed because I realized that God allowed us to reconcile some things in that moment the day before, and that God could have sent anybody, but he sent me in order to speak a blessing over this man's life, not even understanding his condition. So that, you know, and like I said, there are so many other things, but that's just what I'm, you know, feeling guided to share. So after that, even when I got here to Dallas, like I was saying, I didn't know how to manage my finances because my money wasn't my money. And God had begun to really rebuild me and restore me and fulfill the promise that he would restore me and my girl lives here. And so in the midst of, you know, all that, he restored. He restored. And I'm, you know, currently married to a wonderful man, and he's my best friend. And, you know, we're just, you know, moving forward. And so when God had given me Restored to Reign Ministries, it was at one of the darkest hours of my life. And I really didn't know what the ministry was for. But God had continued to just, you know, open doors and reveal to me, you know, who I was and what my purpose was, even in the midst. And so I'm just kind of backing up. Even I've had like 4 near-death experiences. One when I was in Colorado, death angel came for me. And then another time I had a stroke, and this was in like about 2003, I had a stroke. And I was having like staph infections and just all type of mysterious illnesses that the doctors really couldn't diagnose. And so in the midst of that, this one experience, I remember when I had the stroke, my whole right side had just shut down. And I remember getting out of my bed and crawling in the living room. But in the midst of the crawling there in the living room, I kind of just laid there because I was transported into a place where I was in this place with these huge feet, and it made me feel like an ant. And I remember being in this place, and I just wanted to be in this peaceful place where I was. And this place was just so, so comforting to me. But I can hear my middle child's voice, Mommy, you can't leave us. And I was really fighting to come back or to stay in this place. And so I wind up saying, you know, I came back because her voice was just, you know, compelling me, you know, back to consciousness. And so I had walked through that. I had lost my memory and, you know, different things like that, you know, some of my capacities just within my body. And so there were some things that I had to relearn. And so I came through that. And I'm saying all that because in the midst sometimes of life, stress can do very different things to our bodies that we're not aware of. And that's why I always just try to teach people or encourage people to be authentic. And if you don't know how to be authentic, if you don't know how to show up in your life, to reach out to others that can help you bring restoration and healing to your life. Then I'll just share my last experience with you in terms of my death experience. I was sick from like July to September of last year. Again, going to the doctor, them not really knowing what was wrong. My family was really startled this time. They take me to the hospital. They do all the tests you can imagine. I'm not sure if you've ever had a spinal tap, but it's one of the most one of the more dangerous procedures. They did all that, didn't come up with nothing, so they released me after 2 days. But when I came home that Sunday night, my family said that I had got up and I was throwing up. I was losing control of my bowels. But what they didn't realize was that I was in the process of dying. So I find myself in this place, this very dark place this time, tumbleweed. I was very lonely, but I don't think lonely is a word. I always try to find a word that can describe what I was feeling during that whole experience. And I remember just looking around and just feeling just destitute in my spirit. And I said, God, if you would just let me go back to my family, I'll do your will. Now, mind you, I was already a pastor. I was praying, you know, for people. I was counseling, and I was in this great job, you know, making six figures, and I was an executive, and I had the money, and I had the benefits, and I, you know, had the life, and everybody was calling on me. But in that moment, there was nothing that I can do, nothing to manipulate God to have him help me, because even in the midst of me crying out to him, he was silent. But even in the midst of that, it's like I found myself in between heaven and hell. And because of that, it brought me to a place just coming out of that, just to say every day we need to surrender our lives to God. Because, you know, I know there's a saying, once saved, always saved. But we have to continue to evolve into the women and men that God has called us to be. So anyways, and when I woke up the next day, I woke up, but my vision was already leaving me like the days before. My vision was already getting very dim. When I woke up that next day, I was blind. So I, you know, walked through that. My family took me to an eye specialist. They gave me steroids, and, you know, they came with their medical advice of what they thought. And then, so a couple of days after that, I still didn't say anything to my family. There was a lady wind up calling me. She's about 70. And she said, baby, I don't know what's going on with you. And she had began to just talk to me. And she said, I need for you to go get you some white sheets. And she told us very specific things to go get. And she prayed. And I got off the phone, and there was a couple other people that had prayed, that was just, had picked me up in the spirit and had just called. And I remember after I got off the phone with her, I got in the shower, and it was like the water was washing me clean. And it was such a cleansing and such a refreshing and a purification for my soul that whatever it was, it broke that day. And so I... after that, I was able to share the experience with my family, you know, and just really... you know, encouraging them to really seek God in an intimate way to know him, not based on what you've learned in church and all this, but really to set their course on soul healing so that they can fulfill their purpose on this side. So anyways, I went through that. I tried to go back to work the next 2 weeks, and I had started to get sick again. And so in the midst of that, I left corporate America, made the decision, and so here we are, fully doing Restore to Reign Ministries, and I'm active in a homeless community and different things like that. So
Erica, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Yes. So we're almost out of time because
okay.
I spent so much time trying to get the system to work.
Right.
And I wonder if you do me the great honor of coming back next week to finish
yes.
your story. And I have so many questions for you. And I want to get some people notified so they can listen in, because I know I have some people that would have some questions also.
Okay.
So we have about 2 minutes. Can you give us something quick that maybe we can use in our day-to-day life?
Yes, just every day when you awake in the morning, just wake up with a heart of gratitude and thankfulness. Things may not be the way that you think they should be, but you're exactly where you're meant to be at this time and space. Things may be difficult. You may be going through financial turmoil, marriage turmoil, children not in alignment. But I'm telling you, if you wake up every day and set time aside for prayer and meditation and just give your day to God, you'll begin to see things from a different perspective. Make sure you're drinking lots of water, if you can, get out in nature. Just very just simple things, but every day practice the gift and the wonderful, awesome avenue of gratitude.
And just being thankful
for what you have. Yes.
And I want to reiterate to you guys, Erica's absolutely right. You've got to wake up every day and be appreciative, because you have no idea where you could be. And I want to talk about that a little bit more next week. So thank you so much, Erica, for coming. And we look forward to hearing you next week. I have a ton of questions for you.
Okay, perfect. Thanks, Carol.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.